But this little dink ball, you know, the one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken over, hits the ground, and it bounces into a fella's chest.
Why do you not do many interviews?
Oh, really? Yeah, I wasn't being asked to do a whole pile.
Really?
Yeah. Have you ever rang me?
And they're roaring at me, "Hey, Cuffrey, you free state bastard." And next thing I hear, "You have no fucking jurisdiction up here."
Loads of county finals to get through today, lads. We're going to start in Kilkenny. First game on television yesterday was a barnstorming county final, Niall. Fantastic. Ballyhale have won four in a row now. It's the club's second four in a row. And it is TJ Reid, Owen Reid, Colin Fennelly. It's three of them have won 10 now, which include two four in a rows. Am I right in saying that?
Yeah, I'm not sure if they were there for the first four in a row now, but Jesus, to win 10 county titles with your club, like, it's unbelievable stuff. I think the first of them was back in 2006, like, but the lads have been there every step of the way, and sure, still, like, TJ was still sort of lording it yesterday, Owen Reid still there, and Colin Fennelly as well, and they probably have a few more in them as well.
The great thing about this game is that pretty much you think Brian Cody was reffing this game. Just like the famous A versus B's, put the whistle in your pocket and let these boys at it. It just, I don't know, it felt like a really barnstorming match, you know? Like, I mean, it was like the clock had been turned back to 10 years ago.
Jeez, it was savage, wasn't it? Like, it was definitely no place for the faint-hearted out there. I know Brian Cody was up in the stands. Maybe he was in the referee's ear or something like that, because the referee, Owen Behan was his name. I wasn't surprised to learn that he used to hurl for Kilkenny a few years ago, like, because he was a lad that sort of, he enjoyed the hard hits that were going in yesterday, because he thrown the ball in, he blew his whistle, and he seemed to swallow it after that, because even the very first ball, I think it was Owen Reid got the ball up along the sideline, and he was sent right into the wire out towards the stand, and the ref, like, just play away, boys, play away, and that's the way it was for the whole day, like, and you know, it was great to watch, really, wasn't it? Like, it added to the spectacle of the game.
It did. And no players complaining that they're not getting their frees. Like, it's just understood in Kilkenny hurling. I was laughing that Owen Behan is from Fenians, JJ Delaney's club. And I remember very, very well on the Monday after the All-Ireland final in 2019, I had to pull JJ up, and because everybody, the majority of pundits, Lee, agreed that Richie Hogan was very unlucky, but it was a red card. The only pundits that were not in agreement with this were Kilkenny pundits. And I says to JJ, can you not see that you're being biased here? That it's only Kilkenny trying to say it's not. He says, "Wooly, that's not the way the game's reffed in Kilkenny hurling." And I think after seeing yesterday's county final, I definitely appreciate where JJ is coming from. That the game wouldn't even be stopped for that in Kilkenny club hurling.
Yeah, they're just made differently in Kilkenny, aren't they? Bred differently and tougher men, and that's just the way that they are. In fairness to them, it must be really difficult then to go to the county scene. They're blowing up fouls left, right, yeah, and centre for things you wouldn't even consider to be a foul. It must be a hard adjustment to make, but I reckon that when they go back to club football, they can just go hell for leather and really enjoy it.
Yeah,
club hurling.
Yeah, well, I was going to, just about to pull you up on that there, Lee. But I thought Niall took it a bit too far with the Paddy Deegan time when he was through, and he got hit in the face. His nose was bleeding. Like, this wasn't even blown up as a free. Now, Paddy threw his hands up a bit theatrically, which probably turned the referee off giving it to him. And I thought in real time, I was like, Paddy, you're making the most of that. But then you see it, Jizzy, he got a hurl right to the face.
Yeah, like, it was a smack kind of right across the face. The ball was, there was maybe shades of the ball that he got. I think it was Kevin Mullen, and he kind of half got the ball, but geez, he followed through then kind of onto Paddy Deegan's face guard, and it would have been a free in most counties, I'd say, but no, Owen Behan just didn't want to know about frees yesterday. There was one stage, I think it was the 47th minute, there was a puck out, came out from the O'Loughlin Gales goalie, and it landed down, and Adrian Mullen, he shouldered into a lad, he got the ball, he got hammered by another lad, stayed going. Hugh Lawler eventually got onto the ball, and he was nearly upended as well. And there could have been about three or four frees in the one passage of play, but your man didn't even blow the whistle once. Like, he was just, he was delighted with the way the thing was panning out. And it did add to the sort of spectacle of the whole thing, because at the end of that passage of play, then the ball broke out to Brian Cody, and it was a brilliant sort of passage of play. And you know, one of these scores that comes after there's been hits and both teams are thereabouts, and it was a real kind of a momentum changer, I suppose, in the game at that stage. And like, if he had blown for the free, we wouldn't have seen such a great score, you know. So it definitely added to it.
It definitely did. The big turning point of the game, obviously, Lachlan Gaels were heroic. Like, I mean, they were, and it's just almost like you'd see Waterford playing Limerick and they're heroic, but they're just too good, you know. And Ballyhale just wore them down, and they were brilliant in the last quarter, but the Lachlan Gaels were three up, and they tried a bit of a fancy kind of Gaelic football hand pass move. I think it was Paddy Deegan, who, Jesus, we'll talk about him in a second. He gave a hand pass, like the point was on, I suppose, and the last hand pass didn't really send the, I think it was centre forward straight through and goals. It was probably, in hindsight, it was over elaboration. Ballyhale, right from that mistake, they probably should have gone four up. Ballyhale come down, score a goal, and then within a minute of two goals done, game over.
I know, it's mad the way that it just changed on that, like, because it was such a brilliant move, and O'Loughlin's were hurling so well at that stage that they that was the reason they had the confidence to nearly try this move. Like, there was sort of intricate hand passing,
they were playing so well. Yeah,
they were playing so well at that stage. And I was like, Andy Comerford said before the game, he said, like, there's a lot of young lads in the O'Loughlin's team, and they've beaten them in under 21 finals. He said, we're not afraid of Ballyhale, and you could see that in them, like, because they horsed into them from the word go, like. But as soon as that kind of that move broke down, like, Ballyhale had two goals within 2 minutes, and they were only 3 points up, but it was such a momentum shift that you nearly knew the game was over, didn't you?
That was it, yeah. When they went three up, because, like, I mean, at that stage, O'Loughlin Gaels were finding a little bit harder to score. What about Paddy Deegan, right? Because this is the first game we've seen a full... Like, I mean, I'm a little bit obsessed with Paddy Deegan. He's a banker to start 14 for Kilkenny. Like, I can't believe how natural he looks up there. If you were to watch that game, having never heard of Paddy Deegan before, and you're looking at that match, you'd think he's a full forward, wouldn't you? He looked like a full forward. He did the Keane Lynch flick up off the ground. He knows when to throw it off. He knows when to go for his own score. He doesn't look like a defender playing at full forward, does he?
Not at all. Like, I'd say that must be the reason Colin Fenley's after retiring this morning. Like, he's seen the writing on the wall here with Paddy Deegan. But, like, he was flicking balls into his hand. I think twice he got points where he just took, and it's something TJ Reid does very often, takes a quick sideline and is able to get it back and straight over the bar. Like, I don't think he even had a, maybe he had one wide yesterday, but to score 2-4. And, like, Mark and Joey Holden didn't even have a bad game. Like, it was just Paddy Deegan was sort of, he was like a man inspired out there yesterday. And, like, if O'Loughlin Gaels were to have won, like, geez, it would have gone down as the Paddy Deegan county final. But it shows how good Ballyhale are, that even with Paddy Deegan and with most of the O'Loughlin Gaels team playing so well, they were still able to beat them.
Still able to beat them. Number 13 was very good for O'Loughlin Gaels. I don't want to put you on the spot. The chap
Owen
with
Wall
the tattoos.
Was, Owen
Wall, yeah.
Geez, brilliant goal he got, wasn't it?
It was a brilliant goal. And a great point in the second half where he had to throw it back on the hurl. He barely got it over the bar. I wouldn't say he's much of a right hand side.
Yeah, but he was so tricky and jinky, and every time he was on the ball, he was kind of darting one way and going the other, and, like, he just had Ballyhale in a lot of trouble, like. But that's the brilliance of Ballyhale. Like, it wasn't really Colin Fenley or Owen Cody stepping up. It was lads that we hadn't known, really. Like, say, Joseph Cudahy got 1-1, Brian Butler, and then Ronan Corcoran, the man of the match. Like, so how do you beat them?
Yeah, no, he was brilliant in midfield. Brian Cody was in the crowd, Lee, and he had the mask off, which I couldn't believe my eyes. I was saying that we can declare the pandemic completely over now. Brian Cody has discarded the mask.
Yeah, it's unusual to see. It's sort of become part of his identity now. Like, I mean,
it is,
hardly even recognise him without it. And just the Kilkenny badge and everything on it, it's iconic. You could probably sell that on eBay for a brave bit. But it's gone now, so we're all in the clear.
Yeah, we're all in the clear. He's outdoors, I suppose, so it's not too bad. You mentioned Colin Fenley got sent off or retired after the match. And I suppose on the performance, you're looking at Paddy Deegan, you're looking at Colin Fenley. I think the full forward line for Ballyhale only got a point. Colin Fenley probably wasn't at his best. Maybe when you're 32, you take a year out. You know, it's not that same intensity. It's not that same training. You're more relaxed in your life. It might be hard for him to come back at 33 next year, you know, and get back into the swing of things. But he's done anyway. And he probably has 3 or 4 more years with Ballyhale anyways.
Yeah, like, he's still in brilliant shape. Like, as you've seen from I think it was the very first ball that went into him, like, he just bore down on goal. He didn't finish it off, like, but
the full back was brilliant. had his measure.
The cornerback did well as well coming across that time. But yeah, the fullback had a good game too. And it was just, I suppose, yeah, like maybe having taken the year out last year, it kind of gave him, I suppose that gave him the idea whether he wanted to come back. Like he'd have known after the year, do I want to come back or do I want to stay doing what I'm doing? And sure, he's happy enough with Ballyhale. He gets enough hurling there anyway, do you know?
Yeah, exactly. St. Eunan's won in Donegal, Lee. First title in 7 years, which is a good while for Eunan's. It's put them up level with Gweedore now at the top of the table for county titles. It's hard. We'll talk about Eunan's in a minute because, like, I mean, they were good, very good in the second half. It's hard to think of a worse display from a team going for three in a row than Naomh Connell. I would say in the history of Gaelic football, they scored 2 points from play. One was a late one. These are going for three in a row. I have to keep reminding everybody. They were absolutely just deplorably flat. And then to cap it all off, had two players sent off. I would say the first one, Eunan Doherty, was probably harsh. I think he went to give the ball a good aggressive fist and the Eunan's player started holding his neck. I don't think he got hit him in the neck. And then Charles McGuinness, which is just an absolutely horrific sending off on live television. You don't often see that. You see that in a Junior B match. You know, like, you know, for a club going for three in a row and what a strong favourites, geez, they didn't end the day in a good light at all, did they?
No, they really let themselves down. It was a disappointing affair, even from like a neutral's point of view and just trying to and hoping for an entertaining match. We didn't even really get that. But from Naomh Connell, I mean, it looks so lackluster. When your whole performance is based around, you know, negating play and nullifying the opposition and then catching them on the counter and you go down pretty early in the game and you're sort of chasing the game, they obviously look like they'd run out of ideas. That's ending off at the end with Charles McGuinness. I mean, I don't know what was wrong with him. He completely threw the head up, threw an elbow, got sent off for it. And then when the red card was already banished, he went after one other player, put his hands around his throat and was doing the whole macho man thing, like, come on, egging people on and everything. And yeah, it just looked really, really bad. He let the club down massively there.
I think he did. I was complaining about this game during it. And it's not a big deal. Like, we flagged this on Thursday. This is not going to be a good game. We know how Naomh Connell set up. They're very boring. But I think this is a problem in Donegal football in general, because Naomh Connell aren't extremely, extremely defensive. They are very defensive, but they push up on kickouts. You know, we've seen worse years ago and we've seen better games. I think it's a whole mentality in Donegal football that you are completely risk averse. You refuse to bring it into any contact. The minute you see somebody going to tackle you, you kick it backwards, you know, to somebody that's completely free. The person that collects the ball isn't running at pace. He just collects it and he could just run across the side of the field and they'll go the whole way across the other side of the field and they'll start attacking from over there. And they haven't done it at any real pace because the Naomh Connell team could just move across or the Eunan's team could just move across. And it's like you've been on one side, you've been stopped, you've slowly moved it to the other side, you're facing the exact same thing on the other side. And like, you know, it's not like you've been clever and moved it fast across the field. I just don't get it. Like, I mean, they don't attack at pace, neither team, until towards the end. Eunan's, you know, played very well and caught them on the counter, but you know, the Naomh Connell didn't have everybody. They passed the ball backwards all over the field. No matter where it is on the field, they're happy to kick it backwards, pass it backwards. The man that receives the ball is just in a static standing position and they refuse to take any risks. And like, I saw a tweet from Eamon McGee on this. And like, we see teams, lots of teams get 13 men back behind the ball. But when you're so risk averse and you refuse to go in and engage or try to get through them, it just turns into a terribly boring game. I'm not blaming teams for getting 13. Often the very top teams end up with 13 behind the ball. But it doesn't look like a poxy game like you see up in Donegal. And it probably, the attitude is summed up, I read a tweet from Eamon McGee, obviously playing with Gweedore, and they weren't bad to watch when they won it, but they were probably doing a lot of backwards passing as well. I think this is just in their mentality, how they see dealing with this, is never ever to take a chance. He says, on the Donegal final, do we have to have this debate again? Two well-coached teams trying to work out the puzzle. Just a different way of playing the game. And that's a different way of playing the game. And that's unique to Donegal, as far as I'm concerned. They take the whole not taking risks to whole new levels. And that's why their club football stinks the place out. It's impossible to watch. And nobody's necessarily criticising the fact that teams play defensively. It's the teams that refuse to break down the defensive team is probably what, the defensive situation. No excitement in the game. Just a terribly dull, horrible advertisement for Gaelic football. And Eamon obviously more than happy just to be watch two teams work out the puzzle.
Yeah, I mean, the two words you said there, risk adverse, that's exactly it. And it comes down to the coaching. I've been, at coaching sessions where the manager holds up the ball and he says, this is the most important thing on the pitch. When we have it, you have to keep it. And all of that makes complete sense. Of course it does. But when it's just drilled into you and when you're crucified for making mistakes by like attempting to go forward or attempting that kick pass and switching the play a little bit quicker, when you're crucified for things like that, then it's just drilled in you to get it through the hands. We'll go up and down and there's constantly someone on the sideline shouting the word patient. Patience, trying to not rush things. And it's just like, what sort of a game of football that you're going to be in for. About 5-6 years ago, when that was the norm, it was already hard to watch then. Like, no one was really enjoying watching that. But at least it was the norm at the very top level of like the county scene to the very bottom of club football league. That's just what was done.
Yeah.
But now, after such an exciting, county season, and we just spent the summer watching lots of high scoring games, lots of great kick passing and forward attacking and really entertaining stuff, and then you're looking to get your fix of football and you watch this club match and it's like that and you're sent back. It's just such a damn squid. It's just now it's even harder to watch and it's harder to stomach, and it's not, yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's a Donegal thing. Well, it clearly is a Donegal thing because both teams are doing it. Something similar sort of happened in Derry. I know we're going to talk about it later on, but Glenn, at least they were the team that came and brought the attack and they broke through for it in the end. It's a culture change that needs to happen.
Yeah, no, it definitely is. And Unions weren't too much better at it. They just got scores, in the second half. You don't get scores until you want to unless you take a risk. Football has to be about risking, going with a fella off your shoulder and breaking through that line and going at it with pace. Look at Oisín Mullen, look at the way Mayo break down these systems. It's just very, very unusual to go back and see such static, slow, sideways, and they're proud of this. It's like they're trying to be too clever. I don't know. I just from a hurling person's point of view, Niall, I'm a football man, but it's very hard to watch that Ballyhale O'Loughlin's game and be on a bit of a high after and then sit down and watch that. And it was just deplorable stuff to watch.
Yeah, I seen someone tweet this morning that it was like watching Mrs. Brown's Boys after watching Fawlty Towers. Like, it was just like the Kilkenny hurling game was the complete opposite of watching the Donegal club football, because Kilkenny hurling was kind of hard hitting. There was boys bursting forward. And then the Donegal football, it was just, as you said, static, kind of passing across the screen. And the way Eamon McGee is going on about it there, it's kind of as if like this defensive system. Well, it's as if it's something to be proud of, but it's nearly a cop-out just to call that a defensive, that is defensive football. Because as we've seen during the summer, teams can play defensive football and they can still be entertaining and they can still take risks,
It's the attacking team I have the problem with. Both attacking teams, they just refuse to break it down.
Mm.
They refuse to engage, they refuse to attack at pace. It's very, very hard to watch. I suppose Niall O'Donnell and his brother Shane were outstanding for Unions. I don't want to be too hard on Unions. They were the only team that probably did play that bit of football in it. And Rory Kavanagh's first year managing at senior level, I don't want to be too critical of him because that's just the culture up there. That's how they see the right way to break this down is. And that's why their games are 9-all, 8-all. It's not because of the defensive team. It's because how they choose to attack against the defensive team. That seems to be the culture up there. And, Eamon can probably, you have to work out the puzzle, rather than blowing the puzzle away, that kind of way. Because it has been well figured out. That puzzle has been well figured out 5 years ago, hasn't it, Lee? It's no secret. You just don't take the ball into contact without a bit of support. And what's more, the big important thing is if that ball is broken down, you work like a dog as hard as any team to get that ball. You can actually turn the defensive team, their tactics against them, that if it breaks down, if they break you down inside their 45, you've enough men pushed up, you can actually pin them back inside their 45 and win it back off them. You know what I mean? You don't need to be scared of these teams doing this anymore.
No, that's it. And pace is a big thing with it, going up against it as well, because before, when it first sort of came into play, no one knew how to handle it. you'd have the ball, you'd look ahead of you, you'd see 3-4 men and you go, well, I'll give it a go. And then you just ran clearly into traffic, but you've ran from like a static position in the ball. Now it's the runners off the shoulders who break the line. That's how you get through these sort of things, these sort of tackles. And you build your whole play about that. Yeah, hold on to the ball because you can, and then wait for that runner who's going to time it and break that tackle. And if they get through two or three, then another runner has to come through straight off after it. And that's exciting. You know, that's forward thinking football and trying to, and there's, that's a tactical setup. You know, that's two teams. That's a puzzle. And you figured the puzzle out. You know, that is the answer. So I don't really know what that means when both teams are just playing the same way, and it's just not very entertaining in the end.
Yeah.
So the Unions did have better flashes of like creativity and stuff. Like even the goal itself, it came
a lovely
turn over
a
goal kick. Yeah, and it fell to the halfback. He had his head up, you know, and he just floated the ball in beautifully, and it was finished. Like that was a real, you know, like flash of brilliance and a lovely kick pass in. So they were the braver team on the day, and they're the one with the trophy.
Yeah, exactly. And they got an awful lot of joy off the Niamh Connell kick out. That's probably where they got most of the joy. And that's obviously where Niamh Connell are that little bit out of their defensive setup. And Unions have all their forwards kind of in position. So that's kind of, you know, the story of that game. In Naas are Kildare champions. They beat Sarsfields by 14 points to 12. They led the whole way through. They were 8-1 up at one stage. It was their first county title since 1990, and a man playing with them since 1999, their captain Eamon Callaghan, joins us on the line now. Eamon, you're a happy man today.
Yeah, delighted to be honest. Still hasn't quite sunk in yet, but I woke up this morning with a big smile on my face anyway.
You said after the game yesterday, I never thought today would come.
Yeah, I suppose like I've been at it a long time now with the club and the county, and playing for a long time and just never really getting over the line with Kildare, and with the club we were never really kind of at that level where we were competing for championships, and I kind of always wondered like, geez, I'm gonna go my whole career here without winning anything substantial. So I kind of did think for a long time that maybe it wasn't going to happen, but. Yeah, look, we've had a very good year, and yesterday just was just the icing on the cake, really.
So what changed this year? Like, I mean, you know, you're sticking around well. You're still playing well. You're 39 on Friday. You're looking fairly fresh still, to be fair. Like, I mean, you saw this good team coming along and the potential, obviously.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to be involved with them at minor level. I did a bit of coaching for 3 years with the minor teams and the under 21 teams, and we won our first minor championship that year for the first time in pretty much the same, I think, in 30 odd years or 20 odd years, and they won, I think, 3 minors in 4 years there. So I kind of knew something was coming with these younger lads. They were excellent, you know, and there was a good group of them coming through. So they'd also won like a Féile All-Ireland, you know, back when they were playing Féile. So they've stuck at it obviously throughout the years, and when they developed into senior players, then I just knew that we wouldn't be too far off if we could keep them all together.
Right, okay. And one of those young lads, Derek Irwin, he was flying it in the first half. You went 8 points to 1 up. Like, you had a fairy tale start.
I never in all my expectations or kind of seeing how well the game would go, I never thought we'd get that much of a start. Like, you know, 8-1 was kind of surreal. Like, after 22 minutes, I think we were 8-1 up. And we kind of came out of the chaps fairly quick. And, but like, obviously, Sarsfields are always going to come back at you. They're fairly experienced themselves, and they've been here a lot. Like, you know, they've been here for years. They kind of came back at us at the end of the first half. And that, you know, I think we went in at halftime 3 points up. But I think we kind of steadied. We were steady enough at the start of the second half, and we kind of kept our lead. But then the last 15 minutes then was a different story. We was kind of just pure chaos. But
well, that was it.
Luckily, so we were able to hang on.
You kept the lead. You were 6 points up. Of course, I'm only reading match reports. I'll wait to see. TG Cahir will have some highlights tonight, because like, we had to sit through the Donegal County Final, which was no crack at all. And like, I mean, you know, there looked like, you know, it was a very exciting game in that you built up a big lead. After 47 minutes, you still had a 6 point lead, which, you know, fairly solid. And then they scored 5 in a row to leave you only a point up and squeaky bum time.
Oh, stuff! Yeah, it was brutal. Now, to be honest, 10 minutes we just could not get our hands on the ball. Like, whatever happened, and like for kickouts, they won every break, you know. And it was just pure chaos. We had a black card with 10 minutes to go, with about 12 minutes to go, I think. We got a black card, and I think a minute later, or at the same time, Owen Doyle went off injured. So that was a double kind of blow for us in that for the last 10 minutes. And we were just kind of chasing our tails, really. We were just trying to get our hands on the ball. We couldn't do it. Sarsfield just came at us in waves and get the extra man. And I think like they just kind of had to let the shackles off at that stage and just attack us, and they did, in fairness.
Did you think it was slipping away? Like, I mean, you know, you haven't won it in so long, and they're, you know, the more experienced team, they're coming back. Probably a neutral would think Sarsfields are probably going to win it at that stage.
Oh yeah, and that was definitely on the field. I was trying to, I was just kind of trying to get the message across, that just to get on the ball, just to get, if we could get ourselves on the ball, and just even just break the momentum a bit, or you know, run, take a minute or two off the clock. But they were just coming at us and when they got back to 1 point, I was thinking, oh, here we go now. This is going to end well now. But because there was still a couple of minutes to go. I think there was still maybe, including injury time, maybe 3 or 4 minutes. And a 1 point lead was nothing at that stage. They're after kicking 5 in a row, and just thankfully we just got our hands on one ball and got off the pitch, and I think we got a free or something, and we kind of just kept possession for a bit, and ended up just getting a fisted score at the end to kind of make it a 2 point game, and it was time up then.
Yeah, it was Paul McDermott got the fisted point, probably one of the only occasions in a match that you'd actually champion a fisted point. I'm allergic to them, but this was the right decision to make at that stage of the game.
Yeah, well, you won't like the highlights, I think we got 4 fisted points. I think we scored 4 yesterday. We were only talking about last night. Usually, you rarely see them. Well, not that you rarely see them, but to get 4 in one game was something else. But yeah, he took the right option anyway, because if the keeper had saved the goal chance or something, he could have played on another play. So we were all roaring at him to fist it over the bar. Yeah,
I hope none of those fisted points were from Derek Irwin now, because I'm a bit of a fan of Derek Irwin's, and I would be let down. He likes to kick points.
Just don't watch the highlights.
So come here, listen. We maybe put all these fisted points down to their new management team, yourself and Owen. Like, I mean, this is how have you taken to this? Like, I mean, this has just landed on you.
Yeah, it was just mad there for a couple of weeks, but it wasn't really, to be fairness now, it wasn't really a joint management team at all. It was really Owen Doyle. Like, he took charge. I helped him out, obviously, and a couple of the players, senior lads, did, but he really took the reins now, and we just decided that with the timeline, we only had a week to go before the semi-final, so there was only like 2 training sessions to take. So we said we kind of agreed, like, instead of getting a manager in to take over, that we kind of be able to run it ourselves for that week and just try and get over the line, try and get over the semi-final. And then once we did that, then obviously it was just a 2 week gap then to the final. So we kind of felt that we were in a good place. Like, we didn't have to change anything. We kept training, you know, it was the same as we've trained all year. Same preparations, so we kind of just felt it was best to keep it kind of within the players, to kind of organise things ourselves and just do it that way. I think we had the right personnel in the squad to deal with that as well, like, which was a massive thing. Like, the young lads that we talked about are not your ordinary young lads, you know, they're fairly driven and fairly well motivated, and we had a couple of experienced lads then as well to help out.
Well, that was it. We were saying on the show when we heard that news that, you know, the hard work is done, you know, the game plan is kind of settled on, and it's a matter of continuing on. Well, like, was this left to ye as a squad to sit down yourselves and decide, did you want the new manager, or did you, you know, want to do it yourselves? This was your decision.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, like, well, a couple of players met up, like a couple of the kind of senior lads met up when that weekend, and we just had a talk about it and see. We were open up to any options, really. We kind of talked about a lot of things, about bringing managers in, or we had a lot of names, kind of ideas that we could do. But we met for like an hour or two maybe, and we just, after that, we went back and thought about it, and we just came back then after saying that we should lead it, but the players, and Owen was happy to lead it.
Right. And
he did, like, and he did lead it, like, you know, he organised everything, he did a lot of work behind the scenes, just a general stuff for organising training sessions, drills, doing video analysis, and doing all this kind of, he kind of took the reins for that, like. So it worked out very well. Like, Owen is he's a special kind of a character, and you know, he has huge respect amongst the players, so, like, it was fairly you know, it worked out very well for us. It was a tough decision, but I thought it was the right one.
Yeah, definitely. And come here, like, would Owen have been making a few changes mid-game or bringing on subs? Was that his responsibility as well, or was that given to a selector?
Yeah, so we had kind of four local lads in that we knew from the club that Owen brought in to help out just on match day and in training sessions as well. So when we, like, Owen would probably plan out a training session, but we had four lads who kind of ran the session while we trained. We just felt it was important that we needed to concentrate on our own training as well. Like yeah. Owen had to prepare. I had to prepare as normal as we always would, but we was that the lads would kind of take the session, and the same on match day. Then, like, once match day came, they took the reins of it. They organised subs. Any kind of switches or changes had to be made. They did it on the line. So
okay.
Owen would have had them prepped for that. Like,
right. And come here. Like, so I wasn't really thinking. He had to bring in four new lads because Paul Kelly obviously left. So his whole management team would have left then as well.
Yeah. They did. And, like, in fairness, like, see, like, we had Fergal Costello was training us. Like, he's obviously a Mayo, but he's moved up to Naas, and he's been in a Naas for the last 15 years. So he's been around the club, Fergal. So he was coaching us this year, but he went away with the army then a couple of months ago.
Right.
So he was gone. So he was really the only Naas, kind of Naas man in the backroom team. So when Paul Kelly left, then obviously, like, the whole management team left. So we were kind of left with nobody. So we had to start from scratch basically, and that's why we we decided to keep it kind of player led and keep it kind of in house.
Yeah, Jesus, it's a great story. Like, what happened with Paul Kelly? Can you tell me that now that you have won it, or what the hell? Because you hear a whole load of rumours about what went on. Like, I mean, okay, I'll ask you this one: was it a problem with the players, or was it a problem with the, you know, club administration or club, you know, management?
Yeah, so I don't really want to talk about it, to be honest.
Right.
Maybe for another day, and maybe for someone else to talk about it. But look, at he stepped away. I'm sure there's issues going on with stuff in the background. I don't know. What happened. We didn't have time to. We didn't have time. You know, it wasn't like in the middle of the season or in the middle of a league campaign where we could have things could have been sorted out, or
yeah,
we could have gone and got a new manager and got in, and that was the problem. Like, there was no blueprint for us to go off. Like, this had never happened. Like, we couldn't pick up the phone to anyone and say, oh, like, when this happens, gee, what do we do? We kind of had to wing it, like, and it obviously had never happened before. And I think just the timing of it just made it more kind of difficult for us, in that it was like a week before the a semi-final, you know, and that was the kind of biggest hurdle we had to get over.
He must have
it wasn't ideal.
He must have had no other choice to leave at such a time.
Yeah, like with the time frame.
Yeah, with, like, the week before a semi-final. Like, I'm just trying to get my head around what could have happened that would have made this, you know, for him to have left. You know, like, I mean, if he had a problem with the administrators in the club or a problem with the actual club itself, you would have thought still his kind of loyalty to you would have overridden that for another few weeks.
Yeah, and look, I don't know, like, and those conversations might have happened. Behind the scenes, you know, to be honest, we were just kind of told what happened that weekend. Really, we got word, and it was it's a conversation for another day. Really,
yeah.
There's been plenty of rumors going out around there and plenty of talk going around. But it wasn't really anything that the players that would kind of concern the players, really, you know, in the build up to a big semi final, you know, that was the kind of problem we had.
Right. Any contact with him since the final?
Paul has texted wishing us the best of luck, and I've texted him there in the last week, so we've had a bit of contact, yeah.
Right. Okay. Geez, a very interesting story. We'll get to the bottom of it. We'll get to the bottom. I tell you, you run a tight ship in this, because we can't. All we're getting out of there is rumours. So I think that's the Kieran McGeaney effect. Keep it in house, and maybe you used it as a siege mentality, which you would have been used to under Geezer.
I know. Yeah. No, we love a little siege mentality, but it wasn't even the case. Like, you know, in terms of the players, it was always about the players, you know, and like even managers will tell you that, like that they'll do a certain amount, but it's all up to the players really. Like, you know, if they're the ones who have to sacrifice so much and put in the effort, and on the day of a match, they're the ones who have to deliver. And we've spoken about that over the last couple of years, but especially in the last 4 weeks, that like no matter who's in charge of us or who's running the ship, that it's still down to the players, and we kind of focused on that for the last 4 weeks, especially. It wasn't like a siege mentality or anything, but we really just had to kind of focus on the things we were doing all year and to try and just keep the performance levels high, because we had been playing very well all year, and we just had to continue that for the 4 weeks.
Yeah, Cormac, there were some great scenes at the full time whistle. Like, I mean, you seem to be fairly well supported for a town team. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah. There was a huge nice crowd there yesterday. Like, obviously Naas is a big town and there's a huge population there, and you know, I think with the juvenile section is massive in Naas, and there's a lot of kind of parents getting involved and a lot of underage lads. There was a huge amount of kids at the game yesterday, but that was great to see. It was, yeah, like we've never had that. I've never experienced that in the town. Like flags up around the town and just everyone wishing you the best of luck during the week and getting messages from everyone. That's the first time I've ever experienced that with Naas. So that was great to see, you know, because we're always kind of compared to Newbridge, you know, 5-10 minutes across the way there, and they've two of the most successful clubs in the county over the years. And, you know, I think that conversation has always been, how have Naas not, you know, been dominating? But I think we have the things in place there now, where we can start kind of competing at a more consistent level, and that's all you can do really. Like, you can just make sure if you're competing thereabouts, you know, like that's all you'd be looking for.
I definitely relate to a big town and the support. Portlaoise are notoriously have poor support for county finals and stuff. Like, a little village would have a bigger cheer than we would running out in the field.
Yeah.
And then you come back into the town with the cup, and like a lot of people wouldn't even know there was a match on, which is just, it's a weird situation.
Yeah.
But just on that, because like you won your last title in 1990, and before that 1990 title ended a 58-year wait. So, like, I mean, Naas has been really, really badly underachieving, but you think, you know, you've turned that corner now, because like it probably isn't good enough for a big town like Naas. I know there's a lot of competition in the big towns, probably rugby in Naas, but like, I mean, at the same time, like with one team in the town, you know, that needs to be changed, I suppose.
Yeah, and that's something that, you know, I think in Newbridge they have, you know, they have that rivalry between Morphett and Sarsfield, that kind of motivation for lads to play and to stay around and stick at it. And we do have a lot of, there are a lot of distractions, and you might know in a big town like in Portlaoise and Naas as well, like there are a lot of distractions other than football. Not even, like, there's obviously a couple of sports that are being played, but even distractions down the town and different things going on. So I don't understand how we haven't been competing, but my father always says, like, he calls the 1990 team the great one in a row team. So like that's what we're kind of hoping to avoid, you know, that we don't just leave this with one, like a one-hit wonder, and, you know, fall back into the trap. But, like I was saying yesterday, like, we've a hell of a long way to go before we're, like, categorised in the same category as Morville or Sarsfield. You know, they've consistently been there for the last 15 years.
Yeah.
And that's what we're all kind of looking to achieve, like, just to, you know, it's not just about winning one. Like, you know, we really do need to kind of hammer home now the next 5 or 10 years, and hopefully we can do that to be competing at that level.
Well, listen, with the management team you have in place there, there's the sky's the limit. It could be a three in a row with Owen Doyle, an up and coming manager. Yeah. The sky's the limit. Come here, yeah. Abel, I'll let you go and let you get go and enjoy the celebrations. Thanks very much for taking a call. Congratulations.
No problem at all. Thanks very much.
Yeah, great stuff from Eamon there. I'm delighted for Eamon, who, you know, stuck around long enough to win his county title. It's interesting, Lee, where you hear him saying there, like, he'd never won anything, neither with Kildare nor with, he would probably have been beaten in a couple of Leinster finals, and never won anything with Naas. Imagine going through your whole career. Sometimes I think, without going on about what I've won, I don't know, do you take them for granted when you're at a big club like Portlaoise? You know, I've won six, and like, I mean, you know, grand. And won some stuff with Leash as well. And then you think, imagine going through your whole career without having ever won anything like Eamon. You know, for an inter-county player like Eamon, it was just unusual to hear it.
And for a player who's like so clearly deserving to win something and clearly of an ability and a level, you know, where he could be in teams that are winning things. But no, I mean, it's credit to him and it's credit to his longevity as well. You know, he's obviously kept that fire burning and that hunger, and, you know, he just never give up. Like, it's that old fairy tale, is it, that we love to hear in sport, that he wasn't going to quit. And seeing the photos in Sports File afterwards, you know, when he finally got his hands on the trophy and he collapsed, like he was on all fours, you know, when the whistle went, and he just couldn't believe it. Like, it was a real shame that it wasn't on TG Cahir instead of the Donegal game. I mean, because I would love to have seen it. You know, everyone had bought into the narrative of the whole story and everything else. It's just hugely entertaining. I'm looking forward to seeing them in Leinster now.
Yeah, me too. So we want to talk about Glenn, not the Glenn. But before we get to Glenn, there was a small matter of an intermediate championship in Derry, Niall, which Steelstown won. Our very own Conan Doherty, well, not our very own, I can't say that anymore. he hasn't been on the show in over a year. He was doing co-commentary with BBC, and we saw the video. So he got overcome with emotion, and I couldn't understand a word he was saying. It was just as well. He took off all his headgear, his mic, his earphones, and he went running down to jump around with his teammates. Just doesn't get any better than that. He's an old romantic, Conan. I was going to say our Conan.
Yeah, you weren't the only one who couldn't understand a word he was saying, because I was struggling trying to figure it out as well. But no, I played five-a-side with Conan before, and I've never seen him run as fast as he did when he was running into the middle of the pitch there. But it seemed to be a very kind of an emotional occasion. I think they've kind of knocked on the door in Derry a few times and have kind of just narrowly missed out, but it was obviously great for them to break through yesterday. And
it's their first ever win,
is, yeah. It? And the captain gave a mention that the club is named after Brian Oge McKeever, a lad who was a brilliant footballer and passed away a few years ago. So it was kind of very emotional to sort of dedicate the win to him. And you could see by Conan what it meant to everyone up there.
Yeah, everything means something to Conan. If another intermediate team had a fairy tale story, he could start crying. Never mind if Steelstown win it. So congratulations, Steelstown. Congratulations to Conan. The big one, obviously, Lee, was Glenn. Jesus, like, I mean, we're talking about Unions beating Nave Connell handily enough. This was a very surprisingly one-sided game, considering Slocknail's pedigree, winning 5 of the last 7.
Yeah, it was an incredibly comfortable game from a Glenn point of view in the end. And that is obviously hugely surprising. Malachy O'Rourke is the Glenn manager, and he just had them sussed out to a T, to be honest. They played something, you know, of a blanket defence with everyone. Or sorry, Slocknail played something of a blanket defence with sort of everyone behind the ball. And
That's Glenn unlike them, though, isn't it?
Yeah, well, off the ball they get everyone back, and then they break in numbers, to be fair. But this one, it did just look a bit strange, because so Glenn had Kieran McFall in centre half back, and he always came bursting off the shoulder, just like what we were talking about, and he was constantly breaking the line, yeah. And they couldn't contain him in the first half. He scored 3 points from play, and then when you're constantly breaking that line as well and coming at pace, quite often you get fouled. And so they got a handful of free kicks, and Danny Tallon was very clinical on the frees. Slocknail had only scored 1 point in the first half, and that came from Brendan Rogers, who was their fullback. They got a little bit desperate for a score just before half time, and they ended up leaking a goal, which was converted by Danny Tallon. And Glenn would never have admitted it then, and the fans would never have admitted it, because it means so much to them. They're so edgy and everything's on the line. But I couldn't really see any way back. You know, Slocknail just were not in that game. Like, Shane McGuigan had scored something like 3.32 that championship season, and he didn't score at all that first half, and only 1 point in, yeah, the second half. You know, to keep him nullified is that alone is an achievement. And the second half, then Conor Glass just came to the front. He was sensational. Scored a free kick off the ground past the 50. It was unbelievable, and he was breaking the line, coming through with two more scores. It was really just all Glenn. It was disappointing from a Slocknail point of view, and seeing Shane McGuigan come all the way into his own half to get his hands on the ball, you know, with that old desperate thing, I just want to get on it now. I mean, Malachy O'Rourke and the likes must have been delighted to just see him get the ball there so far away from their goal.
Well, that's it. Like, I mean, it's hard. We're talking about Nave Connell with a very unimpressive, you know, 3 in a row attempts. Slocknail had 3 shots in an entire half and only scored one of them. That was Brendan Rogers, you know, who plays in defence. Just a horrific first half from a Slocknail perspective. But I love that Kieran McFall at centre back, and he scored 3 from play, and he's bursting up, breaking the line, doing everything at pace. And that's what football's about, is doing things at pace, not passing back to a fella just standing there in a standing position. There's no coach ever thinks this is a good way to play football. Now, you always support a man at speed and you're breaking some sort of line. You've Conor Glass, Emma Bradley in midfield. What a midfield that is, like a mean lead. They're very strong. And I suppose Conor Glass, Emma Bradley punching holes. It's all about punching holes. And look, we can live, Gaelic football's a decent game to watch, even with bodies drop back. Once you're punching holes and you're trying to get through there and, you know, with a bit of urgency. And obviously, like I say, if it doesn't work out, you're just completely clued on that it's not like 10 years ago when a team turns you over that they're gone off running down the field while the attacking team is kind of standing there, you know, scratching their behind. That's kind of the lazy kind of way it was when teams didn't understand it. Just work to get it back and take it back off them. And I suppose that's the criticism we had from the Donegal one. But Glenn look a very, very good team. There's talk they could dominate now.
Yeah, they really could. That's how comfortable that they looked, and they're only going to go on. They've got a really great manager. All these young players, like I talked about this before, they'd won something like 4 minor titles in a row.
Yeah.
And everyone was saying that when this team finally get to the front, they're going to make some noise in the Derry Senior Championship, because this is their first ever. So they finally got over the line. Conor Carville, the captain, and someone, I don't know if he's not interested in playing for Derry or if he's not looked at, but he's another brilliant player. He got a great score in the first half as well from cornerback, just bursting through, breaking that line. He said after the match, you know, like he was asked, what's it like to finally get that monkey off your back? And he said, really, sometimes it felt like an elephant on the back. But,
right,
you know, elephants, monkeys aside, it's cows that should be worried, because there won't be one milked in Glen for the next couple of days.
Just some great scenes of them coming back in. Excellent segue into that there, Lee. You're getting very, very good at this. There were some great scenes of them coming back into the town or the village, whatever it is, on the back of a lorry and all. And again, it's like the nice things. Like, I mean, Jesus, sometimes you underestimate a county title when they'd never won it before now. Like, I mean, you have Enda Gormley, obviously such a brilliant player for Derry, saying it's the best day of his life. He's 2 weeks off now. Like, they had a good team in the 1990s and they couldn't win it. Fergal McCusker was interviewed as well. This was on Derry TV. He says, we're finally in the winners club. All the tags have been chokers, losers, whatever. We can walk into any bar in Ireland and hold our heads high. Like, I mean, think about that. Like, this is an All-Ireland winner and he's saying that he could walk into a bar, any bar in Ireland, and hold his head high. You know, obviously he means when county titles are being discussed. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. This is obviously something weighing very heavily on these lads, you know? Like, I don't know. I've never really thought of it that kind of much. Then again, like, I won, without brag, I won 6 early and I never didn't have one, if you know what I mean. So you don't really appreciate, you know, the kind of, like you say, the elephant on the back that they had.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it must have been, like, it must have been such a huge thing, like, for Enda Gormley to say that, like, a man who's won All Ireland's, yeah, Ulster titles, won everything there is to win with Derry, like, and for him to say that this is the best day of his life, and he wasn't even playing, like, it kind of, I'd say the whole community, like, they were in the shadows maybe of Slot Neil, and Slot Neil kind of winning everything, and Glenn just being sort of the poor relation.
Bridesmaids,
but,
yeah.
It was great to see that interview with the two boys was just brilliant, because apparently they've been like two kind of huge men in coaching, and they've dedicated their lives nearly to getting the Glenn going in Glenn in underage football, and they've got some brilliant young players on that team now, and as you said, they could be definitely a team to go on and dominate. And the lads, it was great to see that interview, because it sort of It just summed up that kind of how much it can mean to a club who has never won before.
Yeah, no, it definitely has. Before we move off, Glenn, why are they called the Watty Grahams, Lee?
Oh God, I don't know. You just threw that.
I just threw
that. I thought I was really well researched here for the Bobby Glenn match and Slack New match, but why they're actually called that—that's a great question.
Okay,
and,
we'll find that out.
I'm sure someone will tweet me it.
We'll find that out for Thursday's show. On to Laois hurling, Niall Clock Balacolla. So they've won 2 in a row, right? They won the first one this year. They won both county championships this year. I'm getting tongue-tied here. The first one they won in August. That was the 2020 final. And now they've won the 2021 one in November. Picky Maher captaining them to both. They beat Boris Kilcotton in both. It looked over for them. They were 6-0 down, 7 points down at half time. And staged a brilliant comeback in the second half. Like, I mean, Willie Dunphy scored 5 from play. There's a few standout. Picky scored 14 points. All their kind of big players stood up and were counted and won an absolute classic game in Laois.
Yeah, it must be an absolute sickener for Burris Kilcotton, like, to lose two county finals in what, 3 or 4 months, yeah. Like, you know, and they'd lost the county final before that as well. Like, so that's 3 in a row. And Jesus, when you were leading 6 points to no score, when you're up by 7 points at half time, you're thinking, like, this is our day and it's all going so well for you. But it was nearly similar to the O'Loughlin Gales thing. They'd kind of started so well that when the pressure started coming against them at the finish, they just didn't have another kind of gallop in them, like. And the clock by Balakala, lads, just watching the highlights, they kind of really turned it on in the second half. Like, Willie Dunphy, he got some great scores, and like, anytime you've seen him, he's just such an accurate kind of, anytime he gets a chance, it's nearly straight over the bar, like. And he was very good, and Willie Highland, Picky Maher, but Lee Clear scored some brilliant points as well, like, yeah. He scored two absolutely wonderful points down the left wing, like, when they really needed them. And geez, it was a sweet one for them, like, twice in the space of 3 months. It's some going, some, yeah, celebrations.
It's very, very sweet. Lee Clear plays cornerback for Leash Hurlers. He was marking Aaron Dunphy. Aaron Dunphy scored 3. Lee Clear scored 2 from wing back and wing forward. He'd take that. He only outscored by 1 by Aaron Dunphy. Picky Maher was interviewed after the game, obviously the captain, Lee. I'll throw to this because you're our sports psychology expert on this show. So I'll throw this one to... now, this is like, you know, you're meant to keep things positive. And all that kind of positivity is very important from a sports psychology point of view. So here's Picky Maher, the captain. I never thought we'd do back-to-back. Very negative straight away, Picky. The sports psychologist wouldn't like that statement. he says, I never thought we'd do back-to-back. I thought we wouldn't win that game in general, he says. I don't know how we won it, to be honest with you. So I'm sure he was keeping these negative thoughts to himself as captain and saying, geez, lads, I don't know if we've a chance of neither winning back-to-back or winning today. I'm sure it wasn't part of his speech, but I really appreciated his honesty because, like, I mean, negative thoughts pop into every player's head. Like, I mean, it's sometimes hard to push them out. I've thought in the middle of games, you know, when you're meant to be a leader and I'm trying to fight the thoughts of, oh, geez, that's gone now. You know, and you're trying to fight that off and you end up coming back. And the easy thing to say in an interview is to say, geez, you know, I always believed. I don't think fellas are being completely honest with you. I'd be more of a glass half empty, pessimistic type of fellow where I like to think the worst. And then if the best happens, you're delighted, but you're preparing yourself. Do you know that kind of way? I don't know. Like, listen, give me some advice here. I need some help here, Lee.
I can't believe this is my role on the show now. I have like no qualifications or anything to be the sports psychologist, but maybe it's just psychological warfare for next year. He's so far ahead of the game that he's already playing the team down going into next year, and that's his psyche. It's elitism there, like our proper elite mentality.
I think all he needed to do was wrap his two wrists and say, win, Picky, win.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. Or maybe he does it the other way. He gets spurred on and you look at his wrist and it just says, you're crap, you're never going to do it. And that actually spurs him on. It's just an opposite, using negative connotations and turning them into a positive by proving yourself wrong.
I think we're getting to the bottom of the sports psychology of Clock Balakala here, because Picky was also quoted as saying, and so was Willie Dunphy, because the game was getting very close at the end, Niall. It was almost a draw. Boris Kilcotton obviously got it back to a point after Clock Balakala went 2 ahead after going level, and then Boris Kilcotton got back to a point and it looked like it was going to be a draw. And Picky said, the last thing we wanted was a draw. We've Willie Dunphy stag next weekend. So there, I think we're getting into the psyche a little bit. Let's do it for Willie stag.
Geez, that was some interview from Picky.
Yeah,
Manor,
full
it?
Of good, like, quotes, yeah.
I'd say if he was interviewed in the week leading up to the game, he'd hardly have said, I don't think we're going to win this game. But, geez, no, it's brilliant to hear such honesty. And I'd say he's probably telling the truth when he says that they wanted to get it done for Willie Stagg, because, you know, when they've been playing, like, they've been playing a long time now, when the county final led on to another and onto another again 3 months later, like, it's, they probably haven't had much time, you know, to go out and have the crack. So I'd say the whole thing, they were like buzzing, like, we'll win this or we'll lose this, but we'll go out anyway. And if it was a draw and it was to have crashed over into Willie Dunphy's stag weekend, that would have been some disaster,
yeah,
wouldn't it?
Well, think of the week they're going to have. They're going to have the celebrations of the county final, then Willie's stag next weekend. So listen, I'd be a little bit jealous of the week those boys are going to have. The Wolf Tones won it for the first time since 2006 in Meath. This was against the odds as well. Dunboyne were favourites for this one, but never were kind of in control. It was a day for the underdog, wasn't it? Like, I mean, they were in control for the game. They got an early goal. quite like their manager, Michael McDermott, is from Kildare, or from Clare. I'd never heard of him, if I'm being honest. Like, maybe I shouldn't say that, but Kilmurry Kilbricken, he managed them to a county title. They beat Portlaoise, actually, in an All-Ireland semi-final back in 2008. They lost the final to St. Gall's. He won a county title with Mona Lean in Limerick. He won a county title with Ramor United in Cavan. And now he's after winning a county title with Wolf Tones against the odds in Mead. Like, I mean, he said here, because again, I'm coming back to kind of Donegal kind of match. And here's Michael McDermott. He says, we're difficult to break down. He said, because they only conceded 10 points, but it's because we work so hard and we ensure our game plan is about discipline, defending and putting pressure on the man with the ball when they're kicking. I suppose that's just another way of defending, Lee, where you like to put pressure around the field and make sure good ball isn't kicked in, and then trust your defender to be able, if the ball is a little bit sloppy coming in, your defender has a great chance of getting it, especially in kind of tough conditions in winter football. I always remember in winter football, it's very difficult, you know, to play good kicking football because the ball's so slippy, defenders are so tight, and sometimes you'd actually probably win more balls back if you allowed that kick pass in than, you know, you do if you're dropping loads of bodies back.
Yeah, no, for sure. And fair play to Michael. Like, I mean, that's some CV to have, to go to all them different counties and come back with senior titles or senior championship wins. For all of them, so that's very impressive. In terms of the type of football, like that is all about discipline and it's all about trusting the players. Like, we talked a little about, like, Nace, obviously, you know, the players, they all just trust themselves, they didn't have the manager, and player power is such a huge thing nowadays, and just knowing that when they go out there that you can execute the plan, and you shouldn't be ranting and raving from the sideline trying to change things in the middle of the game. It should all be done beforehand, and I think that's sort of what he's talking about when he means the likes of discipline and knowing that they're going to get back and they're going to put the hard work in, and that creating that mentality around that we are hard to break down and getting confidence from that.
Yeah, Keane Ward and Shane Glynn were co-captains, and they shared the speech at the end. I don't think I've ever seen that before. Usually one co-captain defers the speech to somebody else. So enjoyable that they shared the speech. One other thing, and this is from the match report, is I just love this. This is pure Keane Ward. And this is why I love watching Keane Ward playing. Keane Ward, like, to fist pass a point would just be, you know, Keane Ward wouldn't be able to sleep with himself for weeks after. He wouldn't do it anyways. But anyways, he gave out to me recently, I was playing a junior B match and I admitted to fist passing a point and it came off the crossbar, and he actually gave out to me about it. Playing junior B at 43, he just doesn't like it. But here it is off the he hates fist pass the points even more than me. But here's from the match report. Keane Ward signalled his intent to do serious damage by going for a goal with an early free in, dragging his effort just wide. Like, he just go for goal. Even just from a free, I'd say Keane Ward, I haven't seen this, I'm hoping to see it tonight. Like, he could have got a free, someone else get a free. Keane had run up, you know, while the other team is kind of walking backwards towards the goals, and he might just try to flash it in today. He just wants to go for goal. And I love that.
Well, he always had that kind of daring element to his game. Like, he'd be picking off kind of these sort of spectacular passes. And, you know, he was always a brilliant sort of kicker of the ball as well. And I suppose when you have that confidence in your game and you're maybe a bit of a chancer as well, like, you know, he was always going to, he'd take a chance like that. And it is great to see, because it would nearly have the other boys sort of thinking, right, well, these boys, you know, Keane Ward he's going for goals straight away. We could be in a bit of bother here. Like, but apparently he had a brilliant game. Like, he was spraying passes all over the field, and I think he's 36 now, like, but he's still, like, he looks fit, and he's, You never lose it, like, when you have that sort of skill, don't you?
Well, that's the thing. Like, I mean, Keane Ward, like, he wouldn't mind me saying that. Like, I mean, he was never going to win races out to the ball. He's not that type of player. He wasn't that fast. He's brilliant, brilliant football brain. And he is a brilliant passer, and he's brilliantly accurate. Like, I mean, the man could play, he can play for as long as he wants, really, as far as I could see. Like, I mean, I'm sure this will spur him on. In Monaghan, Scotstown won. They beat True is the name of the club they beat. They were managed by Pascal Canavan, and they beat Ballybay in the final. They had no county players, Lee. Very unusual for a club to get to a county final and not have any county players. They were really, really good in the game. They were 5-1 up at the first water break. They only lost by 6 points, but the last kick of the game was a goal for Scotstown. So they kept Scotstown, who were unbackable favourites for this, honest right up until the last kick of the game. So they deserve an awful lot of credit.
Yeah, no, fair play to them. It's an excellent thing, and it's just real. I'm sure they can buy into that and talk about that, how it's just such a club mentality. Then Gannon Clarks did something similar last year for Tyrone. They didn't have any county players in their panel at all in the 2020 season. Paul Donaghy got called up the panel the following year when Brendan Dyer and Fergal Logan took over. So, like, it must be just that sort of psyche of, you know, we love club football and we go for it, and it's just all for the club and wearing it on your heart and your sleeve in that sort of sense, and really having pride in it. So it's that would have been a huge achievement if they got over the line. But Scotstown are a really tough team to beat. Was it Kieran Hughes got man of the match? You know, he kicked 3 points from play. It was excellent. And Conor McCarthy and all as well. Like, I mean, there's some big names who have played county, and they were the difference on the day.
Yeah, Kieran Hughes was man of the match in the semi-final as well. So, like, I mean, it's nice to see him in a little bit of form, because he's gone off the boil completely with Monaghan the last few years because of injuries and things like that. But he's still a really, really big player. It would be good to see him back next year. In Longford, Mullinocta won easily and Gowna drew. So the parish nearly had, you know, double celebrations. Now, as it turns out, Keane Mackey with Mullinocta, completely forgotten about that last Thursday. We didn't give that a mention. He transferred to them from Castle Rahan. One of my favourite moment on the show at the time was when Castle Rahan won the county final in Cavan, two years ago. And I text Keane Mackey after the game. Keane, you know, how's it going? Congratulations. Any chance of taking a call for the show tomorrow at 1 o'clock? No bother, Wooly. He backed to me really quickly. I was delighted. That's done now. No bother, Wooly. Talk to you tomorrow, Grant. Just give us a shout then. Rang him the next day at 1 o'clock. No answer. Rang about three times. Text him. No answer. He replied to me 3 days later. So I always have time for Keane Mackey after that. Now he's winning county titles with Mullinocta. That's their first one in 3 years since they won the three in a row. So congratulations. A weird one in that little parish, Niall, because the Mullinocta lads will be going mad having to crack. The Gowna lads are after drawing. And you were alluding to this. The draw is probably the worst result. I don't mean it's worse than losing. It's not. The Boris Kilcotton Clock Balacala. But you're all geared up. You look at Enda Gormley. He's taken 2 weeks off work. You know, like, there's 1 week ruined if that is a draw. Like, players usually take the Monday and Tuesday off. That's ruined. They're taken. Now I've lost 2 days. You're livid. You kind of mentally, in a way, just want this kind of thing, you know, finalised on the day. And now Ramor are back training while Mullinocta are running around the parish celebrating. So it's not an ideal situation.
No, like, it's you're straight back into it. And I'd say they were planning, I read there that they were planning on having a big kind of a get together, because both teams, Mullinocta and Gowna, they use the same kind of a hotel for their functions, like. And I'd say the place would have been hopping last night and everyone would have been looking forward to it, like. But and then it kind of, Gowna, for it to be dragging on now, it's kind of, it's not what you'd like, but it'd be worse, in fairness. It'd be worse. We're talking about Picky Maris Stag. Would it be worse if you lost the game, in fairness?
But, I would think with the Clock Balacolas, with Picky, and with, I'd say they'd take losing over a draw.
Yeah, but at least the Clock Balacolas lads have a county title only three months ago, do you know? So they could fall back on that.
Yeah, yeah.
For Gowna, in fairness. But that's an unbelievable story, isn't it? That there's only 800 people, 400 in Mullinocta, 400 in Gowna.
So I think Gowna has 700. Yeah, because right. I was talking to Mickey Graham about that, Jeff. 400 and 700, but it's still tiny.
And to have two clubs, like, right beside each other in one half a parish, the other half a parish, both of them in the county finals, like, it's there must be something in the water over there in Loch Gowna, because it's unbelievable stuff from the two of them. And yeah, now Gowna have to go again. The Mullinocta boys will have to be steering clear of them over the next few weeks.
Yeah, exactly. Airogue won in Clare. Can't get every county final in because there's just too many of them. They have five dual players. Shawnee Buckley, ex-Limerick player, is coaching them. Five dual players, and they beat, it's funny, the McCarthys played with Ina, what's the name of it?
Ina Kilnamona.
And their football club is Kilmurry Kilbricken. So the McCarthys won in the hurling against Airogue, and now Airogue have, after getting their own back on their football team. It's kind of two amalgamated teams the McCarthys play for.
Yeah, and it was five dual players, as you said, on the Airogue team. So it'll be nice for them to kind of get their back after losing that hurling semi-final. Like, and there was a few more lads on the panel as well.
No, Shane O'Donnell, Jewel, and disappointed with that. I thought he could have been a bit of a baller.
Yeah, you'd think by him, wouldn't you? Like, he has the speed, and yeah, you'd think he'd be a good footballer. But suppose he must be a busy man. But yeah, disappointing for the McCarthys, but they have a hurling final to look forward to now, so they're not too bad.
Yeah, they won't be too bad. Have to give a shout out to Stephen O'Neill here, Lee. He won a Masters All-Ireland. I played Masters last year myself. It's a fantastic competition. Really, really liked it. A funny thing, which we always give the lads stick on our Masters WhatsApp group, is we forgot to enter it this year. So we would love to have been in it. We would love to have been in it. That's what happens when you're Masters, you forget things.
You're getting old.
So we forgot to enter the competition, which is absolutely dreadful. But Tyrone beat Dublin in the final, and Stephen O'Neill ran amok, especially towards the end. Dublin got a goal to go ahead, and then Stephen O'Neill kind of took over. He's the only player in the history of Gaelic games to have a minor All-Ireland, an under 21 All-Ireland. He has two under 21s, a senior All-Ireland. He has two seniors, if you don't count 2008, which he says he doesn't want the medal for because he only came back for the final, which that's kind of like the Roy Keane mentality. If I don't, you know, contribute on the field, I don't want it. You know, a lot of subs around the country, lifelong subs, won't be happy with that attitude at all. And now he has a Masters All-Ireland. And listen, he could have two or three more Masters All-Ireland. Very disappointed he doesn't have a club All-Ireland. But look, we won't complain too much about that. But that's fantastic. That's never been done before, Lee. And another lovely little story is Cormac McAnallan's brother, Donal. He played in it, midfield. And he has the Masters. So in the McAnallan family, he's completed the set of minor, under 21, senior and Masters All-Ireland. So that was a nice little story too.
Yeah, it was a really nice way to sort of round it all up. He obviously, Cormac McAnallan, who passed away in 2004, he'd already won minor, 21 and senior, of course, the first ever senior title with Tyrone in 2003. So for his brother, Donal, who was a handy footballer as well, I think he played for Tyrone up until about the minor stage, but he just obviously wasn't quite as good as Cormac. So for him to get the boots on and play midfield, and he was integral part of the team himself, and then to say straight afterwards in the post-match interview with Jerome Quinn that you know, that it's nice that he can complete the set for the McAnallan family and bring this medal home. And just at the time of the interview too, you know, he was holding his son, who he called Cormac Jr., and it was all just very fitting and very
nice.
Lovely.
Yeah, absolutely lovely. So fantastic. Congratulations to Tyrone. Again, I have to stress that Masters tournament is absolutely fantastic tournament. The great thing about it, Stephen O'Neill, I think, said after the game, the legs are gone, but you're all of our legs are gone. Everyone's at the same age. So like I always say, they could be playing any level of senior, junior, B, whatever it is, and you could be marking a 20-year-old and you don't have the legs for him, and it's not enjoyable. In the Masters, there is nobody going to be that much younger than you, you know, unless you're really pushing it at 50. And you don't really want to pick 50-year-olds because they're gone that little bit too old. You want 40, 41, 42-year-olds and fit lads as well. So, yeah, fantastic competition. That's it, lads. We don't have time for semi-finals in Dublin. Pat Spillane's son playing for St. Jude's. Didn't realise he had a son that was a senior club footballer. We have Cork semi-finals decided. We have Tipperary football semi-finals decided. We have Mayo football decided. A whole load. We have Wicklow County champions. We can't fit it all in. There's people from Belmullet given out to me that I haven't given Belmullet any shout out on this show. Ryan O'Donoghue is single-handedly dragging him to a county title, beat those fancy boys from Westport, the boys from Belmullet, and they only up from intermediate 2018. I promise we'll do something on Belmullet. We might even get the mullet from Belmullet on the show to talk to us about that. So we'll do all that either Thursday or the following Thursday ahead of that game. So we'll be back this Thursday anyways, and we'll talk to you all then. Good luck.
No such thing as a media ban. We don't have a media ban.
Ah, you do.
No, we don't.
A donkey eat a palace. There's nothing else to eat.
He was massive. Legs, ass, built. But I burst out laughing watching him.